Now let's turn to another interesting topic to get sort of a high-level strategic reaction in light of the comments that have been received on the proposed changes to the financial instruments classification and measurement. So with that, welcome, and I'll turn it over to Yulia.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Yulia Feikina, and I'm looking after limited amendments to IFRS 9. I know that you talked yesterday about some headlines, and I will provide you with more insights on what we heard in the feedback. I will start with a brief reminder of what we proposed and why. Then I will talk briefly about feedback statistics, and then I will talk about what we actually heard in the feedback and next steps. And I will invite questions at the end of my presentation. So starting with a reminder of key proposals. Under IFRS 9 today, a financial asset can be classified at amortized cost if it has simple cash flows and it's held to collect those simple cash flows. Simple cash flows for the purposes of IFRS 9 are payments of principal and interest. Everything else under IFRS 9 is at fair value through profit or loss. In the exposure draft, we kept those basic concepts in IFRS 9, the concept of simple cash flows and holding to collect. However, we clarified what that means. Specifically, we clarified that if an economic relationship between principal and interest in a financial asset is modified, for example, by a leverage feature, the financial asset can still qualify for amortized cost as long as modification is not more than insignificant. So in other words, we clarify that a financial asset does not have to have perfect P&I to qualify for amortized cost. Likewise, we clarified the notion of holding to collect contractual cash flows. In particular, we clarify that sales due to credit deterioration are consistent with the hold to collect. We also clarified that infrequent or insignificant sales for other reasons are consistent with holding to collect. And we propose some additional application guidance on how to assess business model more generally. Arguably, one of the most notable proposals in the exposure draft is the introduction of fair value through OCI measurement category for financial assets. This category was proposed to better portray the variety of business models, to improve the interaction of accounting for financial assets and insurance contract liabilities, and also to more closely align classification and measurement of financial assets under IFRS 9 with the FASB model. This proposed category would be available for simple financial assets which are managed to collect contractual cash flows and for sale. And this category would provide both amortized cost and fair value information for such financial assets. We also made a few transition proposals, which I will talk about later. Now let's take a quick look at feedback statistics. The comment period on the exposure draft finished on 28th of March, and to date, we have received 168 comment letters on the proposals. In addition, we have conducted a comprehensive outreach program. Altogether, we have spoken to more than 60 constituents from various jurisdictions, including preparers from various industries and preparer representative groups, regulators, auditors, and users of financial statements. Some of the outreach activities were conducted jointly with FASB. In addition, we have conducted an online survey for users of financial statements focused on the proposed introduction of fair value OCI category. So in total, we have received more than 60 pieces of feedback from users of financial statements. Now let's look at what the feedback actually tells us. And starting with principal and interest and simple cash flows. Nearly all respondents welcomed the proposed clarifications. They agreed that a financial asset with modified economic relationship can have simple cash flows that are solely P&I, and they also agreed that proposals result in better classification outcomes. However, many respondents also believed that even with the proposed clarifications, the cash flow test in IFRS 9 is still too strict, and some financial assets, which they regard simple, plain vanilla financial assets, would still fail the test in IFRS 9. A most common reason for this concern was the insignificant threshold proposed in the exposure draft. Many constituents felt that perhaps this threshold should be a bit more relaxed, and also that the concept should be applied to a broader range of financial assets. Another very common concern was financial assets with regulated interest rates. Nearly all respondents commented on the proposed application guidance. And here, as often is the case, the views were mixed. Some respondents wanted us to tell them exactly how to do the assessment, whereas other respondents asked us to keep the guidance at the principal level and let them figure out how to apply it in practice. In addition, many respondents raised comments and questions on various topics outside of the scope of the proposed amendments. Some of those questions and comments related to particular products or particular features, for example, prepayments and contingencies, and some of those questions and comments related to fundamental concepts in IFRS 9. For example, what is principal, what is interest, what is time value of money, how about liquidity risk and profit margin, and whether they should be included in the interest. Now, in terms of the next steps on the cash flow test, the staff thinks that many of these questions and concerns can be addressed by reinforcing the principle in IFRS 9 and also improving the application guidance. So in many ways, it's going back to the basics and reminding everyone what simple cash flows is all about. Moving to the business model. Again, just a quick reminder that the proposed fair value OCI category would be available for simple financial assets that are managed to collect contractual cash flows and for sale. And the board believes that for these financial assets, both amortized cost and fair value information are important and should be provided in the primary statements. The views that we heard on this proposed category were mixed. However, the majority of the respondents supported an additional measurement category that would provide amortized cost information in profit or loss and fair value information on the balance sheet and total comprehensive income. So all the views fall in three relatively even groups: those who supported fair value OCI as proposed, those who supported fair value OCI with a variation compared to the proposals, and those who wholeheartedly disagreed with the third measurement category. Those who supported the proposed fair value, who fully supported fair value OCI category, did it for the reasons stated in the exposure draft. They believed that hold and sell is a distinct business model, and they believed that the proposed category provides useful information. Specifically, the majority of users we've spoken to told us that they believe for such financial assets, both amortized cost and fair value information are relevant and should be provided in the primary statements. Those who agreed with fair value OCI with a variation did it for various reasons, and their proposals differed as well. In other words, there is no single alternative fair value OCI proposal that is supported by a broad range of constituents. However, there are some common themes. Some constituents believed that amortized cost and fair value through P&L should be defined categories and fair value OCI should be a residual category. Some constituents believe that fair value OCI should be available for a broader range of financial assets. And finally, some constituents believe that favela OCI should be an option rather than a mandatory category. Now, a minority, but still many respondents disagreed with the proposed favela OCI category. Those constituents would prefer just two measurement categories, as is the case under IFRS 9 today. And the most common arguments that they cited were that the proposed category is similar to available for sale category in IS 39 today. And also, some believe that this is not a distinct business model. There were also a number of questions on the proposed application guidance, which I will talk about after we discuss hold to collect. Now, with the hold to collect, again, just a reminder why we propose clarifications. The board became aware that there are very different interpretations of hold to collect in IFRS 9 today, and therefore the board decided that we need to clarify it and propose additional guidance. Many respondents agreed that the hold to collect and amortized cost became clearer as a result of the proposed clarifications. However, some believed that as a result of those clarifications, amortized cost becomes what they view as inappropriately narrow. And also many constituents raised questions and comments about the proposed application guidance. So one of the things that we proposed in the exposure draft was that an entity should consider the level of sales when assessing the business model. We also propose that sales due to credit deterioration are consistent with holding to collect and amortize cost. And so many respondents believed that not only sales due to credit deterioration, but also sales due to credit concentration are consistent with hold to collect. In addition, many respondents expressed a concern that our proposed guidance places an undue emphasis on the level of sales as opposed to the reason for those sales. And finally, whereas many respondents agreed that the distinction between amortized cost and fair value OCI is clear, they felt that the distinction between fair value OCI and fair value P&L is not necessarily so clear. And in particular, they questioned how one distinguishes managed on a fair value basis, which is an example of fair value through P&L, from managed to maximize return, which is an example of fair value through OCI. And so again, in terms of the next steps, similar to the cash flow test, the staff thinks that many comments and questions can be addressed by reinforcing the principle and also better articulating the fair value through OCI business model. A few words about transition. The exposure draft contained a number of transition proposals, but most notably the proposed early application of just the own credit presentation requirements in IFRS 9. Just to remind you, under IFRS 9 today, for financial liabilities measured at fair value, changes in fair value that are attributable to own credit risk do not hit P&L. Instead, these changes are reported in other comprehensive income. However, under IFRS 9 today, the entity can only apply these requirements together with the rest of IFRS 9. And what we proposed in the exposure draft was that an entity will be able to early apply just those own credit requirements without applying the rest of IFRS 9. So essentially, while the entity still continues to apply IS 39. Nearly all respondents welcomed this proposal, and many respondents actually asked us to make it available even sooner before IFRS 9 is completed. So, for example, by incorporating this early application requirements in an earlier version of IFRS 9 or in IS 39. In addition, many respondents asked us to confirm that the current effective date of IFRS 9, which is 1st of January 2015, will be pushed back, and they asked us to confirm this as soon as possible. These topics will be brought to board consideration in the redeliberations. Just before talking about next steps, a couple of words on other key themes in the feedback that we received. Many respondents commented on complexity, but the feedback was mixed. Some respondents acknowledged the increased complexity, primarily due to the introduction of fair value OCI category, but they believe that this increased complexity is justified by the usefulness of information provided. Other respondents did not believe that increased complexity is justified, and in fact they stated that this is contradictory to the original objective of replacing IS-39, which is reducing complexity. Many respondents also commented on convergence, and again, feedback was mixed. Some respondents welcomed the increased alignment between our model and the FASB model, and they encouraged the boards to continue to work together to bring the models even closer and to align detailed application guidance. These respondents believed that some convergence is better than no convergence. In contrast, other respondents noted that we are not fully converged, and they believed that partial convergence is unhelpful. They believed that nuanced differences are harder to understand than glaring differences, especially for users of financial statements. They also expressed a concern that if the application guidance is not fully aligned, then entities may find themselves under pressure to apply a more prescriptive set of guidance. And finally, there was a group of constituents who believed that in general terms, convergence is a good thing. However, they believed that IFRS should only be changed if it results in improved financial reporting. In other words, convergence in itself should not be the driver. And so in terms of where we are today and the next steps, in May, we brought to the board a summary of the feedback that we have received on the proposed amendments. In June, we'll bring to the board an update on the user outreach activities that we have performed and that are substantially completed by now. And also in June, the FASB staff will bring to the both boards feedback on their proposals. We plan to start joint deliberations in July, and we're already working on the topics for July meetings, and we expect to finish deliberations by the end of this calendar year. So with that, I welcome your questions.
Well, thank you for that. This council isn't here positioned to provide advice on resolution of the technical issues. I think you've given us a good sense that why this has taken as long as it has, and that there are still some significant points of a strategic nature, and I think you alluded to them in your closing remarks. I mean, the basic issue of complexity, there is a cost to being, some would call it more precise, more specific, others would say it's adding complexity, pushing away from principle-based standards. And the other point I thought that you raised of a strategic nature is the worth or not of partial convergence. As you noted, convergence per se shouldn't be the objective, or at least the A view is that convergence might be worthwhile if it has the effect of improving financial reporting. So those were the two observations that sort of caught me of a more strategic nature. With that, though, I invite comments of council members. Jerry?
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for that presentation. I guess my comment or request, really, comes from the narrow view of a large industry, and that's North American life insurance industry particularly, and particularly the Canadian industry, from two perspectives. One has to do, they both relate to relationship to the insurance standard, which is moving forward. One has to do with the implementation date Here I'm focused specifically on the insurance side. So it, you know, the date that you've related to here, which is January of 2015, if it differs from the implementation date of the insurance standard, we're going to have half of our balance sheet moving when the other half is not. And as a business that marries those two things together in our business model, that's a very important issue. So the first request would be to consider, at least for our industry, the possibility of coordinating the implementation of IFRS 9 with the implementation of the new insurance standard, number one. And number two, and related to that, is the definition. I take all of your points about the commentators. The North American industry did respond related to the issues of other comprehensive income. And the concern is the symmetry or the consideration of the relationship between the other comprehensive income in the insurance standard versus that in IFRS 9. And as it stands, the view, particularly again of the Canadian industry, is that that definition needs to be, at least for our purpose, somewhat widened so that we don't end up with a disparity, so that we end up with model-driven volatility introduced by the differences between the AOCI definition and the IFRS 9 and the insurance standard. Thank you.
My suggestion is we get the comments out and then invite some reaction from Julia. Francoise.
Thank you. It's just a small question. I mean, the request by constituents about the own credit risk issue and the effective date have been emphasized. Is there any chance that these deliberations are dealt with in priority at the board?
Sue, do you want to respond to that? Since that's
yes, we're going to be talking to our board advisors in the next week or so to ask them whether they think we should bring those issues first in the re-deliberations, particularly because they don't really affect the FASB.
Jacques.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. In addition to the point raised by Jerry, I will refer to the comments made by some constituents, especially from the insurance side, but not only from the insurance side. I think also to the IFRAG, for instance. With regard to the interrelationship between the IFRS 9, this improvement for the fair value OCI category, and IFRS 4, which is under review by the, and we are going to have a presentation after lunch, and we are waiting for the disclosure draft to be released, as Sue mentioned yesterday, by a few days. So my question is whether the board has considered this comment that related to the interrelationship between both the standards, and whether it will be appropriate to finalize its decision on fair value OCI considering us together the interaction with insurance and the IFRS 4, since it is one element of the one reason of the creation of the fair value OCI category, in order to avoid a mismatch when liabilities, insurance liabilities, are accounted for at the current values through OCI.
Do you want to respond? I mean, that issue has been identified for quite some time now, so I'm not sure who is going to respond at this stage. Julia?
Well, I guess the key point is that we are aware of the interaction between accounting for financial assets and insurance liabilities, and we will consider this as we re-deliberate the proposals in the exposure draft. We'll bring it to the board's attention.
And I think more specifically, some have suggested that the fair value OCI category perhaps is something that should really exist for the purposes of insurance companies and not really anybody else. And so one of the things that will be considered in looking at the business models in the re-deliberations would be bringing that to the board's attention and thinking about whether or not that is appropriate, whether or not there should be a special option for insurance companies or whether it should only exist for insurance companies. So that would be something that we'll at least bring to the board's attention.
All right, so the point has been noted and we'll await the outcome. Any other points of concern? All right, well, I'm taking from that council members from a strategic point of view have no major issues or concerns that they want to raise. On the technical issues, it's be interesting to see how the board wrestles the continuing diversity of views. All right, well, thank you very much for that. Well done. There's nothing else on this topic. I think we are right on schedule for lunch. We have an hour allotted. We content to leave it that way, in which case we'll be back here at 1 p.m. Thank you.